We're going to be using the image of the castle a great deal, really. Like, it gets an integrative image. It integrates the Tree of Life with the Arthurian traditions that are the, I feel like, the homegrown British traditions. And as you work with it, and it increasingly will become your castle, furnished in your way, but it's built upon an archetypal structure that combines the basic Arthurian story with the image of the Tree of Life. So the rooms of the castle are the spheres of the Tree of Life. We visited Diferet, the Round Table. We've gone down into the cave of Malchut. Between them is the room of Yesod, which we've not yet got into. And also there are rooms for each one of the other spheres. There's a spiral stairway that runs all the way up to the top of the castle. And then there are all kinds of different pathways in between the spheres, which align with the paths of the Tree of Life. But the castle, of course, is also a non-linear form. So it's got that basic kind of shape. But you might find other rooms appearing. You might find paths that get tangled up. It's a sort of a living form, really, which, as you work on it, will respond to your work upon it. And the great image, I mean, the image of the castle, when we start to look, is a very powerful one in Brythonic Welsh tradition. Because the castle is the, if you like, the protected place, the stronghold, you could say. The place where the special things are kept and the places where people can go for sanctuary and protection. I mean, there's a very basic kind of level at which that's true. When you look at hill forts, which is where the beginnings of castles, or the Scottish brochs and things, these are places where people retreat to for safety when times are hard. So there's a, you know, it's an enclosed space. You know, And it's one of it's the nature of human beings to create spaces that are safe, but also these are spaces that are demarcated. So the idea of the temple or the template is the place that is somehow set apart, that a boundary is drawn around, so that the work inside it is not interfered with. You know, the root of the word contemplate really is to look upon the sanctuary, is to be able to enter. So the whole nature of something like contemplation is you enter into an uninterrupted space, into an interior space within which a transformational work happens, within which, if you like, the divine spirit appears, or healing happens, or blessing emerges. So there is a, you know, the so the, in a way, the, our castle represents all of that. Now, if we think of the very, obviously when you think about castles, I suppose the place we most easily go to are the great Norman French castles of this country, because they're the visible and obvious things, and certainly because a lot of the, because Mallory, you know, when Malory writes the Morte d'Arthur and brings together the great Arthurian epic, it's very much cast within that Norman French mould. And even the earlier writers like Geoffrey of Monmouth, who's writing for a Norman French audience, is putting it in that term. And so we have this image of Arthur as this medieval king in a medieval castle, much as I've described in some ways. But if we go back to the kind of probably the earliest reference that we have to Arthur and castles is found in Prithae Anuvin, the raid upon Anuvin. And if we go back to that poem, which I'll just read for us again, just to remind us, we will get a sense of the various things that can happen within our castle. So I'll just read it first of all. Prithae Anuvin. I praise the sovereign, high prince of the kingly land, who encompasses the margins of the world. Gwaira's captivity in Caersiddhi is resonant with the tale of Pwyll and Pryderi. None before him was sent into it, into the heavy blue chain that bound the faithful youth. Because of the raid upon Anuvin, he sorely sang. Until the world's ending, our poet's prayer shall sound. Three ship burdens of Prudwen entered within, except seven, none rose up from Caersiddhi. But for seven, none returned from the castle of the mound. I am renowned in fame, the song is heard in Caer Pedefran, four times revolving. My original song stems from the cauldron. By the breath of nine maidens is it kindled. The chief of Anuvin's cauldron waters its power. Ridged with enamel, rimmed with pearl, it will not boil the coward's portion, it is not destined. The sword of Llewach flashes before it, in the hand of Chlaminac it is wielded. Before hell's gates lights are burning, when with Arthur we go to the harrowin. Except seven, none rose up from Cadveddwit, but for seven, none returned from the castle of the hallows. I am renowned in fame, the song is heard in the four-square fort, in the island of the flaming door. Fresh water and jet are mixed, bright wine is the drink served to the host. Three ship burdens of Prudwen we took to sea, except seven, none rose up from Caer Rhigor. I give no reward to the Lord's bookmen who beyond Caer Widri saw not Arthur's valour. 6,000 men there stood upon the wall, hard it is to parley with their sentinel. Three ship burdens of Prudwen we went with Arthur, except seven, none rose up from Caer Golydd, but for seven, none returned from the castle of the wall. I gave no reward to the clerics with trailing shields, who knew not who created who, nor the hour when the chick was born. Who made him? Why, he went not to the meadows of Devwy. They know not whose the brindled ox, thick his headband, with 70 links upon his collar. When we went with Arthur on arduous expedition. But seven, none rose up from Caer Vandwy. But for seven, none rose up from the castle of the deep sea. I give no reward to the clerics of weak intent, who know not on what day the chief is made, who do not know the hour of his birth, nor what silver-headed beast they guard. When we went with Arthur, disastrous contention, except seven, none rose up from Caer Ochven, but for seven, none returned from the castle of the trees. Monks howl like a choir of dogs from a contest with those who know. Does the wind have one track? Is the sea of one water? Does fire have a single spark of fierce tumult? Monks crowd together like wolves from a contest with those who know. They know not the divisions of midnight and dawn, and knowing of the wind's course, what is it attack? Where it ravages, what land it strikes? The saint's grave lies hidden deep in the ground. I praise the sovereign, the great high prince. May sadness leave me. Christ is my protector. Now here we're with the very earliest image of Arthur. long before kingship, he is this figure who leads the raid into the underworld, into this mysterious castle that keeps changing its nature, that's four square, like our castle is four square, but is also fluid, is also the moving place. It's the place where the holy things are found. It's also the place where you get blocked, where you get challenged by the sentinel, who is hard to parley with. Now that experience of the sentinel that's hard to parley with is a completely familiar experience to most of us. The patterns that do not shift, the doubt that does not go away, the sense of trying to do something impossible. And the other word for golly there is the castle of digestion. Because when you're in the hard place, in the place that's hard, that is genuinely hard to parley with, you have to stay with your literally a nose against the stone until something is digested and something gives way. You know, and then you have the experience of something like Caerfyrddin, which is the...
Mine's frozen.
Hmm?
Sorry, mine froze then.
Okay. You have the experience of Caerfyrddin, which is similar, which can mean the castle of the high one, or can mean Manawydan's castle, which is the castle of the deep sea. So you have this place where opposites kind of come together. Caerfyrddin could mean the castle of the trees. It can also mean the castle of the keys. So when is a tree a key? When can a key act like a tree? These are questions. These are kind of challenges somewhere, but also reveal something both of the nature of the root of Arthurian tradition and the idea of what is this castle that we're going to. It's a place where there is feasting, but it can also be the cold castle. So opposites. Opposites made conjunct. So as we build our castle, the building of the castle depends upon us creating the castle, as revisiting it, and meditating it, contemplating it, building the castle. But the castle itself is built, the foundations of the castle are on this intention of bringing together the all and the small. It's a mediating form. It's a form that integrates opposites. It's a form that enables mystery to be embodied. And if we look at a way at where we're beginning this weekend, we're looking at the beginnings of that movement. But the beginnings of that movement have the end. You know, the beginning of a circle. The beginning and the end are the same place. So as we begin, so we end. As we touch into these first, so we touch into this path that conjoins Malchut and Yesod, that is somehow also related to Bina and the supernals.
What was the second word you used there? Related to Bina and...
I'm sorry, I don't remember, Andy.
Supernals.
Oh, supernals, right. So the supernal spheres, the three spheres at the top of the tree. So as we look at the letter Tav, which denotes this path, and we look at making our mark, you know, the cross that denotes position. So we're looking as we make that mark, we denote ourselves, we denote our position in time and space. You know, we are the living cross in that moment. Now, the meditation that we begin with, that's around the senses and the pool and the salmon and the tree, is based upon the very ancient Celtic Christian meditation called Ichthys, which is the very ancient Christian prayer pattern, where the letters of Ichthys, Greek letters of Ichthys, spell out Jesu Christos Theos Huios Sota, which means the Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the Savior, but in an inner way, denote the iota is a straight line. So as we enter in, so as we enter the pool, and as we arise up from that, we enter into the experience and become the living tree. We enter into the iota, the straight line. We become Jesus. We become the human being that unites the divine and the human world. As we come into Christos, we come into the cross. The cross is the initial letter. The cross in Greek letter is the letter Chi, which is the first letter of the word Christos, and represents the expansion in space, the four directions. Theos represents an egg, really, with a line across it, which represents, if you like, the divine mystery surrounding us. Huios is a Y shape, which is like the Christian triskel, which is the Celtic triskel, which is the bringing together of opposites. Sota, which is a kind of a C shape, or sometimes a jagged like inverted Z, represents that energy of blessing that arises out of that. So that this very early kind of meditation, which is and which means fish. It's the letter spells out the word fish, and it's the image of both the Celtic image of the salmon, which is the oldest of beings that does this great journey, life and death and transformation journey, where it swims into the great sea and then returns to the beginning, recreates life, which flows out into the big sea. This is which holds within it the whole cycle of life somewhere. And it's the image, really, of the kind of those who align themselves with the spirit, being the fish that lives and dies to create new life. So for the early Celtic Christian church, this meditation, something that comes right out of the depths of Christian tradition, which of course also unites with the images from Welsh and Druidic tradition. So again, you see the tradition kind of bringing together something from the East and the West to create, you know, quite a simple meditation, but actually quite a profound meditation. And it again creates this mandala figure, these are the overlapping circles. We'll break in a second for a tea break, but the Saint Ichthyd is one of the great figures of this tradition. Completely lost figure now, and in fact, when you look back at Celtic, you know, I've been doing some research what I can find about St. Ichthyd, and there's very little, I mean, there's some really important little bits and pieces you can pick up from the literature, but mostly he's completely unknown figure. So just to remind you, and then we'll come back to it after lunch, he is said to be a cousin of King Arthur. He's said to be a knight of Arthur's court. He sets up an enormous college in what's now Llantwit Major, then Llan Ichthyd Mawr, the great place. The word itself means the great enclosure of Ichthyd, the great monastery, the great teaching college of Ichthyd. And he is the teacher of Taliesin. He is the teacher of the saints, of Saints Patrick's and David, and the great historian Gildas. Now, he is a 5th century figure. He is a Romano-British figure who is still known as Ychdyd the Knight, and who is living at a time when an apocalyptic time for the Romano-British, because the Romans are gone and their world is breaking down. And he is one of these figures that preserves the legacy of tradition. But it's interesting, when I was looking at some representations of him last night, and actually there's very little. Well, it's all just standard. He looks like a standard Celtic saint. And the problem with people like Saint Ychdyd is they get depicted in pious biography in a way that leaves you very little sense of who the person was. But what is clear is that he is a very significant person who's right at the heart of Welsh and British tradition at a very pivotal time. So I'll talk some more about him in a moment, but actually, because we're equally, the reason he's important, one of the reasons he's important, is that we similarly are at a pivotal time of things breaking down. And so Saint Ychdyd might be able to help us a little in this.
Can you spell his name for us, please?
Ylltud.
Ian, what's the link between Ychdyd and the Ichthys? Is that sort of something that's traditionally linked to him, that meditation, or is it recorded somewhere?
It's not just linked to him, Marcus. It's a Celtic Christian meditation, which I've linked to him, I guess, really. Right. So basically, what happened to me when I was contemplating, I was in the preparation for this course, I had a series of experiences of Saint Ychdyd. And as part of that, I was drawn to the Ichthys meditation, which is a Celtic Christian meditation, and they thought of it as an ancient Christian meditation, which for them by that time it would have been, because it had been in existence for a couple of hundred years, and it sort of come together. So no, you won't find anything written about that really, and sort of in the hagiographies of. So that's an association I've made, basically. Yeah.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Okay. Let's have a break for our tea and come back at 4 o'clock, and we shall explore Saint Ychdyd a little more.
So can I ask you quickly a private question, just really quickly?
Yeah.
I had this, you know, when you have to make the mark on the door.